the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is the man with more consistent cameos than Stan Lee, Kyle JCRB Krause.
I keep appearing in every episode. I don't know what to do with it. Weirdest thing! I know! It's very strange.
Since you're here, yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm fine.
Are you really?
Yeah.
I don't know. That tone of voice has me concerned.
No, I'm good. I'm in between projects right now for the most part, which is always terrifying for a freelancer.
Oh, it's like, yeah.
Do I focus on something else? Do I start knocking on doors again? What do you do? I know there's a lot of stuff right on the horizon, so I also don't want to go too far beyond my reach, because once that dam breaks, I'm going to be doing a lot of stuff very fast.
Right. Indeed. I understand that. What have you been up to?
I mostly, like I said, waiting on things to come into play, and I guess it was a week and a half ago at this point, maybe 2 weeks. I got caught off guard by the fandom. Now, a few years ago, back when I had, like, I don't know, 3,000, 4,000 Twitter followers, I figured, let's see if we get something rolling, and tossed out the hashtag Flynn4Sonic with the idea of maybe if there was enough popular demand, it would get Sega's attention, and maybe I could work on a game. Because that has a surprising amount of pull, especially with Sega, since they are very receptive to fan input. I mean, for pity's sake, we're getting a toaster out of this.
Right.
And I have ordered mine. If you have not ordered yours, order it now because I want my toaster. They have to reach that 1,000 limit. Anyway, so I trotted it out there, and I had a few people retweet it. It got a little bit of love, but nothing came of it. And it's like, all right, oh, well, I tried. That was cute.
Sure.
Hubris has been reobtained. And then a couple weeks ago, somebody just tweeted me out of the blue saying, hey, I really want you on the games. What can we do to make this happen? I'm like, oh, yeah, well, there's this hashtag that I tried out. You know, send it around if you want to. Apparently, the first time I did it was the wrong time, because within a day, it had over 500 retweets and 1,000 views, and an entire Twitter channel has been created just to promote this idea, and it gained like 150 followers in 48 hours, and it's like, oh no, this is a lot bigger. This is exactly what I wanted. I didn't realize. It's I keep trotting out this word, but humbling is not sufficient to describe my reaction to this. You know, people are really taking it upon themselves, and it's flattering and just wow.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, even if nothing comes of it, that amount of chutzpah from everyone is just astounding. But not everyone is on Twitter.
Right.
Some folks only listen to the show. So if you're listening to the show right now and you're thinking, hey, I want to help too, but I'm not on Twitter, you can always, I guess, shoot Sega's general tech support an email, because I don't think they have a correspondence email.
Maybe.
But some of the points that I made on Twitter that I really want to stress here in the event that I have a larger audience on this platform are a few points just to keep in mind. Like, number one, if you really want me on the games, attacking the other writers is not the way to do it.
No.
I mean, I understand that fans are very passionate about the series and they are very opinionated about the writing in various games. But going after Mr. Pontek or Mr. Graf and being just scathingly derogatory does not help me. It does not impress me. And it will not go over well with Sega. And those poor guys, you know, are getting dragged across the coal. So if you have your opinion on it, that's fine. If you liked it, great. If you didn't, that's okay too. Just be clear and constructive in the criticism. Calling them names or debasing their work does not do anybody any good. It just makes you sound like a jerk. Number two, kind of extending from that, is don't insult Sega. If you send them an email or a tweet or even say, hey, you're an idiot, you should hire Ian, that doesn't work. That's not a good idea. It's a bad idea. Just say, you know, he's done working Sonic and I want him on the games. Pretty please. That's fine. That's great. That gets the idea across and it's positive. Just don't bite the hand that feeds, you know?
Right.
Another thing that was cropping up is that, you know, there are people online who don't like me. And that's fine. I mean, they really, really, really don't like me, and I don't quite get it, but that's fine. That's their choice. That's their opinion. That's their preference, whatever.
How dare they?
And yeah, they can be confrontational at times, but don't take the bait and don't go after them. You know, there's already, you know, accusations that I am weaponizing the fan base.
Okay.
No, apparently, according to some...
I'm sorry. Sorry.
It's not true.
Obviously not.
But, you know, it's... Don't go after them because that makes them right. You know? Don't become their self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. And if you meet someone who is, you know, super against me and hacked that Twitter account that was in support of me, leave them be. Block them. Ignore them. Because you guys are on completely opposite ends of the divide. There's no middle ground. Just let it be. It's not worth... I am not worth getting into a fight over.
I didn't know that situation. I didn't even know that happened. That's funny.
It's mind-boggling. This situation is not worth that much drama, you know? If you want me on there, cool. Say so. If you don't, also say so. Let Sega know. You know, voice your opinion to them. Don't fight each other. Just keep it chill, please. And one of the other things that the particular Twitter handle is doing is getting examples of stuff that they liked from when I was on the book in the old way and what I've been doing with the new book. But they're also citing stuff that was done by Tracy Yardley, Aaliyah Baker, Evan Stanley, and, you know, various other writers who have been on the book. I did a lot of Sonic stuff over the past 12 years, but I was not alone. Right. So please check your sources. Every issue has a credits in there somewhere. So just to make sure of, you know, who did what. It's flattering and all that everyone seems to think all the best moments are for me, but that is not true. That is not true. And
to be fair, you laid a lot of the groundwork that let other people also shine.
Sure.
There's some credit to be given to you. But I will say that, yes, there are other people involved as well. So,
and if you ever see like a co-writing credit between me and Aaliyah Baker, you can pretty much assume it was mostly Aaliyah. In pretty much all those projects, I did more structural work than story or dialogue. So,
yes,
credit where is due.
I can corroborate this story. It is true. I'm not. I can.
And I like I said on Twitter, I hate giving people directions on how to support me because that feels really scummy and manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
But I have also seen how passion, both positive and negative, can lead to folks going a little crazy. And if they are going to be representing me, so to speak, you know, in front of Sega, I have to step in to some degree and say, guys, if you want to do this for me, let's do it right. Because if we go crazy with it, it's not going to help any of us. So that's where that is. If you are part of that movement, which seems to have calmed down now, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. You are all super freaking cool. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe it won't. We'll see. But you know, let's just keep it chill. Let's keep it civil. Let's keep it friendly and fun and positive. And if you want, keep it going. Because that's... I'm at a loss for words. It's just... It's nice to know that having tried to cultivate a positive interaction with the fan base over the years is bearing some fruit, but I don't know. It gives me all the warms and fuzzies and the teary eyes, and you guys are nice. I like you.
And hey, you know what? If you listen to this show and you leave a negative comment or a confrontational comment, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Because if you're listening, that means you're interacting. And if you're interacting, that's good for YouTube's algorithm. Not that we have any ad revenue, because we're obviously way under the ad revenue threshold now. But hey, any little bit helps and it gets more people listening. So hey, there you go. So thanks for listening, everybody. Even the people who are just listening out of, like, I don't know, what is it, spite? I don't know why some people are listening, but hey, if you're listening, hats off to you. that's what I do now when down in the comments, Ian, if you've noticed, sometimes I'll reply to comments.
No, I've not.
And I'll just say, if anyone's like getting like super negative or railing on something one of us said, I'll just say, hey, thanks for listening. That's my only response.
That's probably the best way to do it, because comment fights are bad.
But, you know, I go through the comments to find questions, and sometimes there's some kind of pretty negative ones. But, hey, they're listening to the show, and that's good. That's good. Keep doing that.
Yeah, I actually saw a comment.
It only helps us.
A couple days ago about somebody saying they missed the old web forums that used to be everywhere. You know, moderated web forums where you would have rules and regulations and some degree of filtering to get out some of the more negative or inflammatory comments. And I understand that sentiment, especially with how rapid fire some other venues are. But I think they forgot just how much work goes into that kind of moderation. I mean, we were super liberal on the Bumble King forums in what we would allow and how much latitude we would give some people. And even still, that was an exhausting effort. So that's why we don't have web forums anymore, people.
Yeah,
it wears you down.
Well, there are still some forums out there, but they're few and far between. And yeah, it's tough to keep moderating those sorts of things over the years. I mean, just look at how hard it is for big companies to moderate their own platforms. And then there's like, and then these platforms are under like arguments of whether they are considered public forums and are even able to moderate themselves in the way they would like to and all that stuff. So yeah, the bigger you are, the worse it gets. So yeah, I do not, as someone with some moderation experience in forums, I don't envy pretty much anybody in the position of trying to moderate any sort of social interaction on the internet. It's not fun and it's not good. So yeah, but that's cool. I'm glad that the people are standing up for you, Ian, and they want you to write the games and the comics. Hey, that would be really cool, actually, to maybe actually have some interaction between the two, maybe? That would be up to Sega, of course.
Yeah, I would.
But it would be cool.
From my experience, I would say they would not, but who knows? I've given up trying to predict where this franchise is going at any given moment.
You could at least make a few tenuous connections here and there, you know, and maybe not anything too overt, but you can at least tie them in together a little more than they are now, or at least have been in the past. Because now you're actually kind of following up on the story of Forces directly, so you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, I hope. So, well, I have finished up tying into the main theme of this episode, which we'll be getting to in a little bit. I finished up watching season 2 of Luke Cage earlier. Oh,
how was that?
Man, it's really freaking good. I won't delve into any spoilers, but I highly recommend both season 1 and 2 of Luke Cage. I really recommend all of the Marvel shows. Maybe even Iron Fist.
I was about to ask.
I mean, if I recommend Iron Fist for two things. Claire Temple and Colleen Wing. That's about it. I don't recommend it for Iron Fist. Although, I will say that between The Defenders and Luke Cage Season 2, I'm kind of okay with Danny Rand now. They've set him on a path of redemption that I think might actually get more people to not hate him, which is good. he's actually like funny. He's entertaining. He's kind of like, he's what Iron Fist is kind of supposed to be. He's kind of the more jokey and silly of the two, of Luke Cage and Iron Fist. He's actually kind of in character. He's what you'd expect. He's a lot more balanced now. He was really obnoxious and annoying and like just angry in his own show. And I think he's finally gotten kicked down a peg or two to finally realize that he was just being kind of a jerk. So, but he's only in 1.5 episodes, but I gotta say that, Black Mariah is not someone you want to mess around with. I don't know how familiar you are with Luke Cage, Ian, but
very, very little. Mostly, but I was into it during kind of a resurgence of the book. Oh shoot, who was the writer? It was with like Seven World Tournament, but I am not overly familiar with most of the Heroes for Hire.
Mm-hmm. Well, Black Mariah. You don't mess around with her. She's, whew, yeah. I'd say the villains kind of stole the show this season, which was also the case with the last season, the first half of last season. But man, they really upped the ante on this one. They were all really solid. Bushmaster and Mariah and Shades all were like, man, just freaking compelling as all heck. So I won't get into spoilers, but I will say that if you enjoyed season one of Luke Cage, particularly the first half, then you will definitely want to catch up on season two. So that's my high level overview of it.
Cool, cool. Is it going to transition into our main topic then?
Well, first, I think we should get into some Bumble Raffle goodness. What do you think about that?
Ah, you are absolutely right. It completely slipped my mind. What a fool I was. Now, the Bumble Raffle is a contest we have every episode where you could win a mysterious prize. Write into us at bumblecast@yahoo.com for every time you want to enter in, or be a patron over at patreon.com, and you are automatically entered into every single drawing.
All right. This week's winner is
Neil H. Congratulations.
All right, Neil. We'll get in contact with you and let us know what you want for your super secret, super special prize. Super special Sonic Search and Smash prize. Is that a thing I can call it? I don't know. Is that copyright?
As long as we stipulate that it is not necessarily anything Sonic related.
It doesn't have to be. Not directly. Anyway, I think we're ready to move into our main topic now, Ian.
And what we're doing is we're talking about the sequel to Ant-Man, which is Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes. Or the Wasp and her silly sidekick, Ant-Man.
Which is really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
As usual, we'll do a non-spoilery pass, and then we'll get into a little more nitty-gritty stuff, but we'll give you plenty of heads up before we start delving into the spoilers. Although it's not really a spoiler-heavy movie, I guess.
Well, maybe not, except toward the end.
Yeah, but we'll get to that. But the movie itself is, I don't know, I really like these episodic Marvel films.
Right, it's pretty well self-contained.
Yeah, you don't even really need to know much about the first film to get into it. You'll get more out of it, sure, but
yeah,
most of the major pillars are explained. I mean, they go out of their way to explain the tie-ins to Civil War and where it fits in with Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
And really the biggest spoilers about the film are what characters show up and the jokes. It's really just a nice have an adventure film.
It's a bit of a reprieve from the main storyline that we've been getting from most of the other Marvel movies as of late, which I appreciate.
And I will say that if you're like me and feel exactly like Kyle did, that it was a nice change of pace compared to the doom and gloom that was in the other Marvel films, do not stay for the end credits. Because the end credits tie it back into the greater Marvel universe, and it totally killed my buzz, man. Just enjoy the film on itself and get out.
It kind of did because of, you know, who was involved. It's like, ah, no.
Which is not to say that these are bad scenes. It's just, okay, we're really treading that line on spoilers. But
No. You'll probably know what's happening almost immediately, like I did. I'm like, oh no. They have not addressed anything during the movie. Is this the point where they do it? Yeah, it probably is. Oh boy. So yeah. We're trying not to spoil anything, but yeah, I'm sure you probably know what's coming.
Now, I really like the fact that, you know, it's a sequel. And it's a primarily comedic movie.
Yes.
But they didn't retread the old jokes. There were some callbacks to some of the highlights from the first film. Mm-hmm. But they didn't go, oh, remember what was so funny the first time? Well, we're going to do it again and drive it into the ground. Mm-hmm. They had fun with it. They did some new ideas. They played with the rules that they set up the first time around. And it's not a groundbreaking film. It's not like the must-see film of the summer, but it's a nice, fun continuation. It's a really solid sequel.
As character interactions go, I think it has some of the best, at least in recent Marvel movies. I don't know what it is. There's just something delightful about it. It's fun. It's funny. It's just a lighthearted. It's a very lighthearted story, and what has been very kind of a dark and dour Marvel universe as of late.
And it's also very personal without getting into a lot of drama.
Right. It's very small, you could say.
Very small film with very big concepts. Is that what you're going for, Kyle?
Sure. We'll go with that. Yeah. Fine.
But, I mean, a lot of the film revolves around Scott Lang having gotten in trouble during Civil War, and considering that the first film started off with him at odds with his ex and her new husband and the custody of his daughter because of all of that, it would have been very, very easy for them to retread that aspect by having the family not trust him anymore. But they didn't. Again, not to get too deep into the weeds here, but they could have gone for the very cheap drama angle, and they avoided it while still keeping the characters true to who they are, and that's just really nice and refreshing.
I really did find some heartwarming moments. Some of the more heartwarming moments were the ones with Scott and his daughter.
Yeah.
It was just like, well, that's really cute, actually. That's really cool. He's just a nice guy. He has a criminal past, but he's a con with a heart of gold, I guess.
Yeah. And considering that he does it for a living, he's a very pro con.
Ha ha! Very nice.
No, it was terrible. Another thing I like is that, you know, with all these, you know, big CG final battles and fighting for the kingdom or for the fate of the world or blah, 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 the antagonist this time around isn't so much a villain as she's put into a very bad situation, and it happens to coincide with the hero's mission. It isn't end of the world stakes. It's very, very personal for everybody.
Right.
And it's nice to have that kind of low-key interaction. It's not what we always get from the Marvel films. I mean, I'm sure you could probably break it down into the Marvel film structure, but
sure,
it isn't the same kind of conflict, so it doesn't feel as fatiguing. It's just everyone is at odds and they get through it. And the level of personal interaction and I guess devotion is kind of a central theme to it all, is just, it's nice. It's a very, like you said, very character-driven, very mm-hmm. down-to-earth movie with people growing and shrinking and entering into different states of reality and whatnot.
I really did like the way they made use of the growing and shrinking aspects of throughout the fight scenes, though, too. Mm-hmm, I have mm-hmm. to say, that the CG work in this movie is way above the first one, and just actually using it in practical ways, because obviously a lot of it is CG, but there's also a lot of practical stuff mixed in with it, and I think they do a really good job of melding those two together. So I definitely enjoyed that aspect of it. Is it a spoiler to say who the villain is?
I guess not, because they showed her off in the trailer.
Of
the trailer. So yeah, Ghost.
Ghost, yeah.
Although I'm not familiar with the character in the comics, but I'm pretty sure
the
movie version is just the character by name and kind of power, and the rest is new stuff.
I think that's true, yeah. I don't know anything about Ghost, really. As far as Marvel comics go, I'd say the ones I knew the least about before going in was Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. I really didn't know a whole heck of a lot about them. I know a little bit more about the Wasp, because the Wasp is great. Just in general, but also in this movie. But that's about it.
I do like that the title is a little misleading, because you think it's about a certain couple of characters, but it may not be. But it is at the same time, so it is accurate. But it also has another meaning to it, so that's kind of fun.
You mean it's about both? No, won't get into spoilers. Never mind.
One last thing before we go into the spoiler territory. Apparently we were just dragged in there. I'm going to be super nerdy nitpicky here, and with the first film, I gave a lot of the pseudoscience a pass because, you know, PIM particles, and you just have to accept it.
It's comic books. Come on, Ian. You know comics.
Yeah, he's got to run with it. All
right. Right.
The dude grows and shrinks. They at least threw you a bone saying that he needs an environmental suit so he can survive the mm-hmm. different changes. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
With this film, as much fun as this one particular chase scene was, the physics of it bug me.
What?
Which one? We'll get into the spoilers so I can actually talk about it.
Okay.
So here's your last warning. We're going into spoiler territory because Ian has to rant and rave about a comic book movie that he should just sit back and enjoy. Last chance. Get out now. Jump ahead to the Q&A. All right, so in any of the car chase sequences,
yes, I thought they were awesome. The car down,
oh, they're great! They're tons of fun, but when the car shrinks to that size and it's still pulling ahead of the other vehicles, the amount of speed it has to have to cover that much more distance relative to its size is crazy.
Maybe. I'm trying to think, because RC cars they're to scale. They have different scale levels for RC car sizes. And a lot of them go like scale 200 miles an hour, which is around like 50, 60. So I'm kind of wondering if maybe the same thing could be said for that.
Yeah, but an RC car understand. Is not nearly that small.
Some of them are, but maybe not ones that go that fast. I guess that's true. I can buy it. Just, I don't know. It doesn't bother me that much. I actually thought some of the chase scenes, the car chases, were some of the better car chases I've seen in recent movie history.
Oh, sure. It was inventive. It was fun. They played with the whole size changing thing in neat ways that it didn't become repetitive. It's just a tiny car going so fast without any perceivable extra effort. I'm thinking too hard about it. I know. Just,
yeah, because I guess the size of the engine would also scale down. So it would still be in scale with itself.
But then you also have the same issues of where is how is the mass retained? You know, the first movie they had the tank on a keychain, and sure, it's super tiny, but it still should be multiple tons.
Sure.
You know, he uses the building as a carry-on, which is a fantastic visual, but that's still hundreds, if not thousands, of tons of concrete and electronics that are being carted around with no effort. It's, where does the plumbing go? Where do the electric connections go? Are all they all self-contained? And
there's got to be something with PIM particles that we that either wasn't explained or could be used to explain something like that. To be like, oh, it also affects the weight of the object. But I don't, sure. I don't know. That's really all I can think
give
of.
Me my hand wave. I will take that hand wave with a smile. Just give me the hand.
Yeah.
Wave it for me, please.
wave your hands. Just wave them all over.
And I feel bad because I love Lawrence Fishburne as an actor. I cannot remember the name of the character he plays.
Foster?
There we go. Thank you.
I'm surprised I remember
I feel bad because my only experience with his character in the comics is when he gets killed during Civil War. And it's like, oh, there was this guy? Oh, he's dead now. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know any. I don't know anything about him from the comics at all.
And it was one of those really cheap deaths, too. It's like, oh, shock factor. We killed off this guy that if you're a hardcore fan, you'll remember him.
Mm-hmm.
No? Well, it's still really bad that he did this. It's like, okay.
You killed sure. that guy. How dare you?
Yeah, him. But I'm hoping, and really, really hoping, that, okay, so the after credits scene, Scott goes in to get whatever quantum energy juice they need to fix Ghost.
The quantum healing energy, yes.
Yeah. The magic juju. So
it's not magic, it's science.
So presumably, they know how to get in touch with Dr. Foster and Ghost so that they can give her the zippity-zap to make her better.
Sure.
Now, we know Foster has experience with the growing technology. Ghost already has a power set. And we would presume that they know about the expedition. So, in Avengers 4, are they going to be the ones to come to check up on things and they get Scott out of the quantum realm and they team up with the Avengers to kick some ass and we actually get on-screen Black Goliath?
That would be cool. I would be down. But
I mean,
I don't know, we'll see.
Mostly wanting this for, like, Scott and Bill to both grow super tall and just stomp on Thanos. And then Ghost just kind of like phases through their ankles to grab the Infinity Gauntlet. That would be really cool.
Yeah. I kind of
having Ghost just zip around Thanos anyway would be really cool. I'm all on board for more characters. Come on.
I kind of thought.
Am I reading too much into it?
I kind of thought maybe it would be more of a smaller thing. Not get bigger, but get smaller to get the Infinity Gauntlet or the Infinity Stones out of the gauntlet or whatever, but I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know, though. We'll see. It could be anything. So, but we
after credit scenes.
Yeah. You know what's funny?
Not those?
No, but they kind of played it up in the lead up to the movie. They kind of played up Michelle Pfeiffer being more of a presence in the movie than she actually was. By the way, I just wanted to mention that. It just
really?
Seemed, yeah, because she's like freaking on like all the posters I saw, she's like the biggest character on there. She's like front and center over everybody else.
Because all the ads I've seen, she wasn't even there.
Really?
I didn't know she was in the film until I saw.
Maybe they're just different versions of the poster, and one of them is with her as the largest one, and I kept seeing that one. Okay, maybe not. But I don't know. That's just kind of how I saw it. I just was like, huh. I don't know. I just kept seeing stuff about Michelle Pfeiffer, probably because she's been relatively quiet in the movie industry for a while. So maybe that's why people were, it was just like a big deal because she was finally coming back to a movie. But regardless, I liked her performance.
Yeah.
For the little bit she was in it.
She wasn't there a lot, but she had a very strong presence throughout.
Right.
She was the central thing.
She was kind of she was the driving force behind the plot of the movie. So
I felt like the need to siphon off her quantumness to fix Ghost was kind of a forced conflict, but it worked.
Yeah, it's not a big deal.
Like, if it had been more of a matter of Ghost needed the tunnel to specifically power her, and that would somehow destabilize things and lose Wasp, or it was kind of an all or nothing thing, we get one or the other, that I think would have been a little better, but we're splitting hairs at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know, as heart-wrenching as the first after credit scene was, I feel like the second one is just a mean joke. It's like, oh, we tore your heart out, huh? Well, here we're doing it again, but we're also making it kind of funny. It's like, stop it! Just leave me alone!
I've had enough. At least we know the emergency alert system still works in after the snap. It's good to know somebody had the forethought to turn that on. It's a little late, but...
I don't feel so good. I better flip the switch.
Yeah, pretty much. We don't know who's missing. It could be like the entire government of every country on Earth could be missing, which could be interesting.
No, darn.
Which could be interesting.
Yeah.
I kind of doubt that, but...
I am assuming that for the next film we'll have the founding Avengers, because those all seem to be conspicuously spared.
All except one.
Yeah, but they left him out on purpose, I think.
Who?
Hawkeye.
No. Not Hawkeye. I'm talking about one from this movie. The one who gave the Avengers their name, dude. The Wasp. Both of them.
Yeah, but not in, I mean, movie founding.
Okay. Fine.
Wasp has been very, very late to the party in the cinematic universe.
I know, which really annoys me, because I was hoping she would be one of the founding members like she's supposed to be.
Well, also keep in mind, you know, the level of CG and technology that they're working with 10 years ago.
Right.
Versus what they have today.
I understand why they didn't necessarily do it 10 years ago, but still. Come on.
I know.
I'm just glad we got a Wasp movie, finally. I've been saying it for years, especially since Ant-Man. But even before that, we need a Wasp movie. And we finally got one, so I'm glad.
We did.
I'm happy.
Do you think they'll actually go on to do a third one just to have the Marvel Trinity thing, or?
I hope so. This one seems to be doing well. I don't see why they wouldn't. But
not being too familiar with that side of the Marvel Universe, I'm not sure what they would do for it, but... You know.
They can come up with something. They got years of comics to pull from. They can figure something out.
Trot out Ultron again and get him right this time?
Maybe. By the way, I don't know what it is about the costumes in this movie, but I don't know. I think the Ant-Man and Wasp costumes might be my favorites of the Marvel Universe.
They're really freaking cool. Yeah.
Especially Wasp. I don't know what it is. There's just something about it that I really like. It just looks really cool. So, and of course Evangeline Lilly is great. I like how she can kind of, you know, she takes a joke. She doesn't play the mother figure between Scott and Hank. You know, that's where so many female characters get dragged into that kind of trope.
Be like, yeah, you're either the love interest or the mother figure.
Yeah, the one reasonable character amongst a bunch of guys who just are just ridiculous. Which I think is something that Black Widow has gotten kind of saddled with a little bit.
Yeah.
At least on some occasions. So I'm kind of glad that they didn't go that route with her.
Be interesting to see what they do with her solo movie and what they do with Captain Marvel.
Yes, I am very much looking forward to Captain Marvel. Partially because we're finally getting Coulson back for the movies.
Mm-hmm.
After he's been away on his own show, doing his own thing. where they don't even acknowledge that he's still alive in the movies because, well, I guess nobody in the movies is supposed to know he's still alive except for Nick Fury, but we'll ignore that. Nick Fury's been missing for a little while anyway.
It'd be really funny if in Avengers 4, you know, everybody gets snapped back to reality and Cap sees Coulson and says, "Oh, wow, we accidentally brought you back too." Yeah.
I won't spoil season 5 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but let's just say snaps were not involved. Yeah, I won't spoil that for anybody, but yeah, they did not address any snappage. I'll say that much. They addressed the existence of Thanos, but there was no snapping, which is interesting. So that's all I'll say about it. So I think that's about all we have to say about Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, so let's do some Q&A.
Alrighty then. Don't forget to ask your Q&A questions. You can do it via email at bumblecast@yahoo.com, on Twitter at bumblecast, in the YouTube comments down below if you're listening to this on YouTube, or via Patreon. We're going to get into the priority Q&A from our $5 and up patrons. First up comes from Scruffy Matt. "I find that I often have a problem where I have a number of games in my backlog I need to get around to either finishing or even starting, but I keep finding myself going back to playing other games for the umpteenth time. I just keep going back to the Batman Arkham series or the Dead Rising series, or about once a year the Portal series. So I was wondering if you two have any games that you adore and can play over and over again, even if it means your backlog just gets bigger and bigger." I'm glad you're not asking us, "So how do you manage your backlog?" It's like, I don't.
You don't?
No, not at all.
I always take these questions. Kyle, you go first.
Oh, geez. I don't know. The truck simulator games. I keep going back to those, even though I probably should be playing something else. What else do I go back to? I tend to, like, I'll fire up an old, like, SNES or N64 or Sega Genesis game. Usually ends up being, like, a Sonic game in the case of Genesis. Or, I don't know, Mario games. I don't have a whole heck of a lot that I go back to lately just because I haven't had the chance to play many video games lately, but I have some of my old mainstays, and they usually end up being kind of the mainstays that have been with me since childhood, so Mario and Sonic games. F-Zero sometimes, I do that, but what about you, Ian?
Skies of Arcadia is at the top of the list. It's the only RPG that I have gone back to and played through start to finish 100% it as best I can with just a smile on my face start to finish. Even the parts that kind of drag, I just love that game so much. It's so charming and fun, and I'll even play it the exact same way over and over. It's just, I like it. Some of the Tales of games to a lesser degree. Usually, Ellie and I will try to go through on the New Game Plus to get all the post-game content, and then we'll just hit a wall at some point. You know, one hard boss unlock thing, or we just run out of steam or something. The games that I will go back to when I just kind of want to play something and not think are like Stardew Valley or Terraria.
Right.
I've been addicted to Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition, because now that they made the drop and made things so much more forgiving, it's like, okay, just I'll get this one done. I unlock that, I'll get that one done. Mm-hmm. I might as well do this. I mean, I'm right here. It's not that hard. And I keep thinking to myself, I'm devoting this much time to these games, I might as well just stream them, but that would require me to stop playing for a half minute and get up and do, and no. No, can't stop. Mustn't stop. Who needs to eat? Must gain rupees.
Well, we can figure that out. But
there's the kinds of games that I just kind of pick up and jump into. Like with Terraria, I'll make a fair amount of progress and then get bored with it and start a new file. And it's that kind of first digging in experience that's a lot of fun, and then you kind of get overwhelmed with the projects you have. It's like, eh, it was more fun just starting out.
Sure.
New ball, new world.
Yeah. I kind of, like, sometimes I'll get into, like, a city builder. Like, I love SimCity 2000, so I'll fire that up on occasion and be like, eh, I'll just play this for a little while. Or SimCity 4, mm-hmm. one of those. Actually, the newest one, City Skylines, newer one, I should say, that's kind of a spiritual successor to SimCity, is really good, and I like that one a lot, but that's really about it.
I would get obsessive over Salmon Run in Splatoon 2, but it got to a point where it was stressing me out too much because I was either the only person on the team that knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, come on, guys, we need to get this guy. We need to take this out. We need to grab the X. Go, move, move. Why are you not playing the game right? Or I was the biggest liability. You know, I can't see on the screen for 2 seconds before I get blown up. I can't shoot anything, even though it's sitting right in front of me. I am dragging the team down. I am a failure. Please don't hate me. Wah. So there was no middle ground. You know, it's always, I am the best. I am the worst. Except for that one magical moment where the team is like all in sync and you feel like gods.
Yeah. I guess for me, the answer to this question, let's see, 5 or 6 years ago would have been City of Heroes, but City of Heroes got shut down and is long gone, and I've never really had anything to replace it so much. So, yeah, that was that's about it, I guess. That's my last one. That's the last time I had a game where I would just do that instead of actually playing games that I had, you know, bought. it's terrible. It's terrible, Scruffy Matt. It's terrible. All right, next question comes from Eric F. Could Shadow have been the first super and the reason Sonic, Knuckles, and even Tails have powers as a direct result of the Shadow projects?
You might make a case for him being the first super kind of in the way that Bardock in Dragon Ball Z is kind of the first super, but I wouldn't say he has any the other characters. They're not related at all. Now, in terms of chronological transformation, no, that would be Sonic, unless Shadow did it at some point 50 years ago before he was put into stasis. But it might be a title that you could kind of throw out there, but I wouldn't say that there's any connection.
All right, and let's get into the standard Q&A action. First one comes from Antonio V. What did you think of the Sonic Rush and Sonic Advance games?
Kyle, what did you think of those?
I liked them. That's really all I could say, I guess. Rush introduced Blaze, which is always good. I think I eventually kind of got stuck with Sonic Advance 2 and never really got past it and just kind of gave up. But it was all right. It was certainly, they were certainly beacons in the dark time of 2006.
Yeah.
People were like, oh man, Sonic is so bad. It's so, so bad. And I'm like, well, now, come on, Sonic Advance and Sonic Rush aren't that bad. But people are like, no, Sonic 06 is horrible, it's horrible, it's awful. And I'm like, well, there's still some decent Sonic games going on over here. They're okay. Play these. Nobody listened to me.
I like them all enough. I think Sonic Rush Adventure is the better of the two Rush games.
See, and that's the one I have, like, the least experience with,
because I mean Rush introduced the whole new formula and it did it well enough, but it was more or less play the game as Sonic and then play it again as Blaze, just slightly different.
Sure.
Rush introduced more variety, and while some of the boat sections were a pain in the butt, the exploration of the map was fun. The ability to switch between Sonic and Blaze on the fly, not on the fly but at will for the most part, fairly early on in the game was nice. Having, you know, some remix boss fights were kind of fun. That one I felt like was, they really fleshed out the idea and had a lot of fun with it. With the Advanced series, I would say the third one is my favorite because of all the different team combo abilities. Even if they're minor stuff, it's just fun to see what you could get by the various character combos. The problem I have with the Advanced series is I think the sprites are really ugly, and I feel like what could have been a really cool soundtrack in all the games is hurt by the Game Boy's advanced chip, sound chip. It sounds bad. Like Chaos Angel is one of my favorite Sonic tracks, bar none, flat out. But I feel like it sounds so much better when it's covered by somebody when it was coming out of the Game Boy Advance. It's shrill and grating. And
I think the resolution hurts the sprites, because there have been some, I've seen some kind of, you know, HDified improved versions of Sonic Advance sprites, and they look pretty good. So I think it just kind of, I think it's the resolution kind of kills it. I'd say Sonic Rush looks a lot better.
Oh yeah.
But there's some decently fluid animations in Sonic Advance, but it's still, I would definitely not say they're anywhere near as iconic as the Genesis Sonic sprites at all, for sure. In no way.
And this is mostly me, but I have a real hard time tracking what's going on at top speed, especially in Sonic Rush.
It can be tough because of the dual screen.
Mm-hmm. Just some of the time attack stuff, it's like, I have no idea what's going on the screen. Where am I? I feel like there isn't enough contrast between your character and the background and the foreground, but I feel like that's more me than it is a fault of the games.
Yeah. Sonic Rush is a little bit better as a single screen experience, which is possible to do through certain means. So I would say that if you can get both the top and bottom on one screen, that would be the ideal way to play Sonic Rush. That's really all I can say about it. I do like the music in Sonic Rush, though. The music in Rush is great.
It's funky.
I think Advance kind of... I would agree with you. It's a bit shrill, and the Game Boy Advance doesn't really do it any favors.
And I don't know, even if, like I said, with Chaos Angel, it's such a solid track, all three versions.
Yeah.
That sticks in your mind. I can't really think too much of the other stages, but I didn't play the Advance series as religiously as I did the original trilogy, so.
Right.
There's part of that too.
Yeah, I can hardly remember the melodies of Sonic Advance songs. They don't really stick with me nearly as much as classic tunes. All right, next one comes from Papa Dripopolis. You're in an elevator with someone important who can get you writing a Donald Duck book. What's the pitch you make for the direction you'd take the book in?
Here's John Gray's contact info. Go for him.
I figured John Gray would be the one who's in the elevator.
Truth be told, if I, through some magical happenstance, got onto a duck book, he would be pretty much my go-to guy.
Yeah.
I am not as familiar with the Duck universe as I am with other stuff, so he would kind of be my go-to guy. I would, you know, pitch general ideas for him. Has this been done before? Is there a character that could fill this niche? You know, help me build this. I don't know what tools and parts I have.
It seems a little weird that they'd go for you and not for but hey, this is a theoretical universe where you get to write a Donald Duck book.
I don't know, because the Disney Adventure stuff is more general kind of adventure stuff.
Right.
It isn't, you know, overarching plot so much as it is, here is the story that we're telling, which is a very different way of approaching it that I have not really done all that much. So
there have been more, more episodic, I suppose.
Yeah.
Issue by issue rather than, you know, having a big overarching plot.
I mean, some series I know exactly pitch immediately, right now, just fired off the top of my head. But Donald, I would need more time. I would need to prep and think on that.
And finally, this last one from Excel Hedge. What are your thoughts on the concept video for Jet Set Evolution, and why do you think Sega's reluctant on making a new Jet Set game?
Oh, I saw the video, and it was neat. I'm not sure. Now, I don't really know anything about the process of pitching games to larger studios, so I don't know if this was kind of a standard for what you would do. It was pretty, sure.
Yeah.
The song weaseled its way into my brain and was stuck there for a few days, so sure. But it didn't really show off a lot of, I guess, what the core gameplay would be. I mean, it would be a sequel to Jet Set Radio, so you know basically. But I feel like the video, the proof of concept didn't do a lot to show what it could be, just here's the style, which maybe that's all you need. I don't know.
It didn't really show how it separates itself from the previous games in the series so much.
Right. I mean, the models were great, the textures were great, the music was great. It didn't show what the game would be.
Sure.
So if that was what kind of derailed it, I could understand. But it seems to be part of a long list of Sega IPs that have been pitched by developers that weren't picked up. Like, I've heard tell that there was a Odin Sphere-esque remake of Golden Axe going around at one point. There was a super retro tongue-in-cheek Streets of Rage concept that was going around. I could pitch you a dozen Chow mobile game ideas off the top of my head. You could do a Altered Beast God of War clone. There's a lot of ideas out there, but they're not being picked up, and I don't know why. I could speculate, sure, but I don't know Sega's thinking, because I'm not really part of their inner circle.
I'm kind of wondering, I don't know what Jet Set Radio and Jet Set Radio Future sales numbers were, and I don't know what I don't know what the remake of Jet Set Radio, I don't know what the sales numbers were for that, for the relatively recent re-release they did. I don't know if there's justification in there for them to spend the money on another sequel in the franchise. That's usually, honestly, that's generally what it boils down to, is money.
Yeah.
And if they figure that that interest is limited and there really isn't much money to be made from doing a sequel, then they probably won't, unfortunately. And that's kind of the sad reality of business is, and there's a ton of things I love that I'd love to see more of that I just, realistically, it's almost surely never going to happen because there's no other interest in it except from maybe hardcore fans, which are few and far between for certain things out there.
Right. I think it's kind of a catch-22 in Sega's condition because AAA games are ridiculously expensive at this point.
Right. Yes, they are.
The level of polish the industry expects, consumers expect from it, is, I think, a tad high. And the only way you can really do a smaller budget, polished but not all the bells and whistles type of game is if you go on the indie scene, where if you go very retro, low tech, everyone accepts it because it's an indie game. If Sega were to do, you know, a budgeted, smaller game, say a relaunch of Jet Set Radio or any of the other IPs, they would be raked over the coals for it because they're Sega. They need to be producing at the same level as Sony and Nintendo and Naughty Dog and all these other developers because they're Sega. How dare you not do this top-shelf game experience? At the same time, you have all these IPs that have languished or are more cult classics than anything else. They don't necessarily warrant more than a small budget, you know, a small but focused game.
Right.
It doesn't need to be huge. It just needs to be fun. And I don't think the market as it is would accept that. And that's a real shame.
I think right now the double A experience for games, for lack of a better term, which kind of was like mid-tier kind of budget titles, it's very small. There was that Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice a year or two ago, I want to say. That was a very focused AAA-esque experience on a budget that turned out really well. But there really aren't many other games like that. I guess you could argue maybe Sonic Forces also falls into that, considering it was only a $40 game when it launched.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean,
but
that's a perfect example, because one of the things that Sonic Forces gets lambasted for is because folks seem to have been expecting another Sonic Adventure, Sonic Generations level title, and it was not. It was a very short, very focused kind of time attacky game.
Well, Generations launched at like what, $30 or $40 too, though.
Did it? I thought it was a full price.
No.
Really?
At least not on PC. Maybe on consoles it was. But I don't...
I'm pretty sure it was full price console.
I think... I don't pre-order games at full price, Ian. I don't pre-order games at $60. And I pre-ordered... I pre-ordered Sonic Generations. So...
Well, I didn't pay any attention to the price because it looked like the most awesome, fantastical game ever, and it pretty much was. So.
Right, right. But I still would have waited for the price to come down if it were a full $60. That's just me. That's just how I am. But I'm pretty sure it was it had a smaller price tag. But I understand what you mean, regardless. Because Sonic Adventure 1 and 2 were definitely full price games.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like the crown jewel pantheon, but it wasn't, you know, the travesty that some people make it out to be. It was a fun little go-fast game.
Yeah, you know? I thought it was fine, just based on what I've seen of it. It looks fine. Looks fun.
I
mean, looks
like, yeah, I might have wanted a little bit more out of it, but there was a fair amount of content, and it was a fun pick-up, play, put-down type of game.
Yeah.
So,
being able to make your own character is pretty neat. That's a really... that's like a brilliant strategy on Sega and Sonic Team's part to give everybody the chance to make their own persona. That's kind of brilliant. That probably sold thousands of copies alone.
I mean, I'm not super familiar with the Jet Set Radio series. I never played them, but you know, if I don't know, had a focused campaign of maybe 5 or 6 stages, with the option of DLC, so that if it, you know, works well enough, you can continue the studio, and if not, shut down production, maybe? Just, I don't know. I don't know.
I think it could work, but it's hard to nail down exactly why these companies, just what their justification is, but it's usually monetary, sadly. Maybe Sega's just in a position where they can't afford a game of that size.
Yeah.
Of that budget.
And then it becomes a question of how do you market it? Do you try to go for the general audience for sale? Do you bank on the hardcore fans so you have the dedicated sales? Is that going to be enough to cover production? Or do you need to kind of go for both? It's complicated.
I think there's something of a market there for the Jet Set Radio series if you wanted to go for, like, say, the same crew that likes Splatoon.
Yeah.
They have similar styles. You could kind of roll that in. But, I don't know.
On that happy note, let's give a big shout out to all the people who make this show possible.
All right. Do it to it, Ian.
Okay. Here we go. Big thank you to Eric F, Daniel H, Alex P, Brando Fatoler, Scruffy Matt, Chris A, John B, Sam Cybercat, Mike B, Samuel P, Jennifer R, David C, Revan the Light, Lisa M, AE Double, Brody M, Neil H, Damo, Justin S, Justin G, Dan M S, Adam T, Silly String, Takaro, Michael A Q, H K, Chevelle, Don B, Sin Fritz, Taco Elgato Comics, John M, S, Orovich 9X, James K, Tick Tick, ah, darn it, Pappy Drapopolis, Think Overthinking Films, Adam BT, and Ron.
Thanks, Ron. And everybody else, too. But mostly Ron. No, I'm just kidding.
I came so close. So close.
You almost did it in one breath. I'm impressed.
Curse these inefficient lungs of mine.
Your lung capacity is improving. We do this every 2 weeks, so you get quite a workout. So I'm impressed. You are getting
better. Where can they find you after the show, Kyle?
You can find me back in bed. I'm going back to bed after this. But you can also find me on Twitter at KyleJCRB. You can also head on over to KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of the Bumblecast. And also my other show, Nitro Game Injection, which you can also listen to streaming live Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time over on the KNGI Network.
And you can find me at bumbleking.com. That has all the releases I've got coming up, all my previous work, all my cons appearances, all that happy stuff. Or you can stalk me on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC.
And don't forget, you can also follow the show and get news and updates and all that good stuff on Twitter at BumbleCast. You can also ask your Q&A questions there, along with asking your Q&A questions at BumbleCast@Yahoo.com.
If you're a patron, you can join us Sunday nights now for exclusive live streams of gaming. And as we've said, this is us trying something new out. If Sundays are not working for you guys, let us know and try something.
Yeah, it's a test run. We'll figure it out. In the meantime, though, you can also head on over to the Bumble store, where you can get some Bumble gear for your Bumble body, or anything else you want to Bumble out, at shop.spreadshirt.com/bumblestore.
That's going to wrap us up for Bumblecast episode 72. Y'all have yourselves a wonderful evening. Are you here?
Oh, I don't know what that was.
Did you become a seagull?
Oh, I am a flock of seagulls.
Go back to bed, dude. You're delirious.
Nah, I'm just normal. This is just me. This is just me, dude. Come on, you know me. This is how I am.
This is natural habitat.
Oh, this is what I am. The shadow would say.
A seagull containing the ultimate power.
It just sounds miserable.
Where's that damn fourth breadcrumb?
Oh, man. That's the worst.
Maria, this is what you wanted, isn't it? A chance for everyone to go, whoa!
Shadow is a seagull. It sounds like a horrible, horrible time.
Like, I don't know. I think we could run with this.
Shadow the seagull. Sounds miserable. Oh boy.
Coastline control. Yeah. Where the fuck is that fourth chaos emerald?
Ba-dum! You're horrible.
I know.
It's okay though. Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay what you want download. I'm recording, so you're free to begin whenever.
Get that golden voice up and running.
Okay.
Get on coughing up that xenomorph.
Never.